Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Koh, your host, and thank you guys once again for tuning in. Today, I'm so excited because I have Dr. Margaret Paul here. She holds a PhD in psychology, and she is a relationship expert. She's also a public speaker, a workshop leader, an educator, and she's been on many, many radio shows and TV shows. She's also the author of several books from Do I Have to Give Up Me to Be Loved? The Inner Bonding, Healing Your Aloneness, to her latest book, Divine Connection, Beyond Junk Food and Junk Thoughts, to At Will Spiritual Connection. If you guys haven't checked her out, it came across my life over and over until I knew this was something I needed to explore. I was Google searching and there she was repeatedly. So I looked into it and I realized this was like one of the few systems I have found that simplifies very complicated concepts into a very digestible six-step program, which typically I find six-step programs are superficial. This one is really deep and really, really effective. It has changed my life, and I think it could do the same for you. Today, we just break it down. That voice in your head, that part of you that derails you, right? Where you're pissed or you're blaming or you're sad or you're frustrated and you can't get past it. You're just not feeling good. You don't know why. You want to escape the feeling. So maybe you have a lot of friends that you talk to and you go through it a million times, or you have an addiction that you turn to. You just numb out with television, or you turn towards internal abuse systems, whatever it is that keeps you from getting past it, and this repetitious pattern is plaguing you, this really is one of the best systems I've ever found. So we're going to break this down, jump into as many steps as possible, but if you want to check it out, it's at innerbonding.com. All the information will be on my website. As always, Dr. Margaret Paul. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Koh, your host, and today I have Margaret Paul joining us, the author, public speaker, workshop leader, and even been on the Oprah show. I'm sort of a little jealous on that one. That's amazing. Working with couples, businesses, individuals on connecting to yourself, finding the love within yourself. We're going to go into it today. I am excited because, as you know, Margaret, I have been a huge fan of your work. So thank you so much for showing up today.
You're welcome. I'm excited about this.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those of you listening, I didn't stumble into, it's like the universe kept placing you in my path. I was searching up different things I was interested in, and there'd be an article that you'd written. And then there was another article and another article. And I thought, okay, clearly I need to follow up on this. All these paths are leading to the same place. And I have been studying this inner bonding system that we're going to share today with the listeners. And it's made a tremendous impact on my life. So I'm excited for people to share in that. So Margaret, if you wouldn't mind taking us back, bringing the listeners a little bit into your journey. I've heard it, but such a great story, the frustrations you had with therapy and why you ultimately felt, as a PhD who'd studied this, who'd been through therapy, who had seen patients for a long, long time, what was lacking and what did you feel the inner bonding system came out of and for what reason?
Yeah. So, you know, like so many people who go into this work, I came from a dysfunctional family and I knew since I was five that this is what I wanted to do. But I went into all kinds of different therapy myself because I was not a happy camper as a young woman. And, they all help a little bit, but it did not actually touch the level of anxiety and self-judgment and all that was going on for me. So I practiced traditional psychotherapy for 17 years, and I wasn't happy with it. I wasn't happy with what had happened with me, with what was happening with my clients. And at that point, I was on a spiritual path, and I started to pray for a process that would go deep and fast that people could learn to do themselves. And that's when I met Dr. Erica Chopitz. She's the co-creator of Inner Bonding. And we had to meet because she had half the process, I had half the process. And we put it together with our higher help, and inner bonding emerged, and I started to practice it. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I could start to feel huge changes in me. And that was like 36 years ago. It's evolved into an amazing process that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people all over the world are using now. And I'm just so grateful that it came in and that it helped so many people and that it's changed my life completely. So, you know, I know personally how much it works.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's changed mine. I mean, I'm very grateful that you've taken the time to do it and that you're willing to share it. And I've been sharing it with people as much as I can because it's transformative in that it's very, on the face of it, it feels very straightforward, but there's a lot of depth to what you're doing, right? You're saying right. Things like higher self, I want to come back to real quick, but like there's a lot of components that I know have come from a lot of very, very meaningful places. But before we go deep, maybe you could give everybody a general sense about this inner bonding, the six-step program. I'm just going to be honest with you. I practiced authenticity for a long time. I've been doing this for a decade. And I don't know. I was in a relationship. Things were going, you know, not so well at the end. There was cancer. There was a lot going on in our home. And I was doing okay. I was like, wow, I think I've kind of like worked out this life thing. Like I'm feeling kind of good. Like everything is going pretty well, despite the challenges I was facing. But I left the relationship and I met somebody that I fell deeply in love with. And all of a sudden there was this whole new set of narratives, all this complexity that was going on with me. And that ultimately led me to your work. But this internal dialogue, these false beliefs, the way your brain gets hijacked, right? Like that's what I'm so excited about. How does this system... how could you describe that in the most basic terms for people so they can follow?
Yeah. So all of us, as we're growing up, absorb false beliefs from other people, from things that we conclude, from experiences we have. And these false beliefs get housed in the lower part of our brain called the amygdala. And this is in the limbic system of the brain. It's not a part of the brain where we, you know, where we're thinking real consciously and where we're operating from a lot of understanding or logic. But this part of the brain takes over when we have fear. And in relationships, of course, you know, our fear got triggered in our primary relationships as we were growing up. And so it gets triggered again in relationships as adults. So what happens with inner bonding is that inner bonding, as you said, it's a six-step process. It teaches us how to use our feelings, which you can call an inner child or your soul or your essence or your true self, whatever works for you. But our feelings are a source of information. And unfortunately, in our society, so many people have been taught to avoid their feelings, take medication, don't feel, you can't handle your feelings, it's too big, you're going to go crazy. You know, all these beliefs that we can't handle pain.
Yeah,
and so we learn to avoid our feelings, and we don't learn that in fact we're creating many of them by the ways we've learned to avoid them. Mm-hmm. And so inner bonding is a way of learning to get present with our feelings and learn to learn from them. In inner bonding, there's only two intentions. One is the intention to protect against pain with various forms of controlling behavior, and the other is the intention to learn about loving yourself and sharing your love with others, for us to be able to love ourselves and then share our love with others. And so many people get into relationships not knowing how to love themselves and not being filled up with love. And then they're trying to get love. And then once they're trying to get love, they're trying to have control over getting love. And that creates a lot of problems. So in inner bonding, we're learning to be present in our body rather than in our head, which is an avoidance of feelings. We're learning to open to learning, being in our heart, open to learning about our feelings. We're learning to access a higher source of love and wisdom and compassion to help us with this. we're learning to go inside and see how we're treating ourselves, because this is what it's all about. Yeah. Like if you have an actual child who's upset, if you want to be a loving parent, you sit with the child. You want to understand what's going on. I mean, it's natural for a loving parent to do that. We don't think about doing that for ourselves is the problem. Mm-hmm. And so inner bonding is a process of learning to do that for yourself, learning to get present, learning to learn from your feelings, and then going deeper into why are you judging yourself? Why are you avoiding yourself? What's your beliefs? And that's where we get down to the more subconscious, unconscious belief systems. And then we learn to tap into, we teach people how to tap into their higher source of love and truth. And we go to access what's the truth and what would be loving to us. And then we take that loving action. And then we see how we feel after doing that. And so those are basically the six steps, which I could go through more clearly if you want. But when people practice that, everything changes for them.
Yeah.
No, it's like if you adopt a child who'd been in foster homes and completely abandoned, and you start to pay attention and give love to the child, everything changes. And that happens on the inner level.
Yeah. And this is why I'm so excited to share this. And I want to break it down so people can get as much value. But of course, they can come to your site. There's all sorts of free resources all the way through to workshops or working with you individually. But the thing I love is the empowerment. Because I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I feel many of us disempower ourselves by placing whatever's going on within us out to the world. We say, right. Oh my God, that person is making me feel, or, I'm not deserving of this because, but it's out there, it's out in the world, right?
Right.
There's somebody who's the object of it, or something that's the object of it. And we narrate, we keep going and going and going in our heads about this, but then we're powerless because it's not in our hands. And what I love about your system is, nope, that's going on within you. There are sometimes external limitations, and sometimes there are real things that are happening that are problematic, but a lot of it is happening within us. So that's what you call this wounded self. So, right, like if you could break down what is the wounded self, how does it come into an existence, and how do we manage this craziness in our head?
Yeah. So the wounded self, another word is ego.
Yeah.
When we were putting together inner bonding, ego kind of had a negative connotation, and we don't really want people to see it as negative, because we all develop this part as part of our survival. But the wounded self is the part of us that we created, and usually when we're very young, we started it, and it's based on the false belief that there's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And most of us, when we were growing up, experienced some rejection, pain, and when we're not getting the love that we need, we only have two ways of seeing that. Either we get that our parents or caregivers are incapable of loving us. And if we really get that, we think, oh my God, I'm stuck here for 18 years. You know, I can't handle this. And I think some kids just check out, or they go, you know, attached to an animal or a neighbor or a relative. But what most of us did is say, the reason I'm not getting love is because there's something wrong with me. And what this does is it gives us a sense of control. Because if it's my fault that I'm not getting the love I need, then I can change. I can be different. Uh-huh. I can give myself up. I can get mad. I can do all kinds of things to try and control. If it's me, well, that's the beginning of the wounded self. And this wounded self develops all the way through childhood, adolescence, young adulthood. We learn different addictions, different defenses, different ways of reacting when we're scared, and different false beliefs. And so at any given time, that wounded self might be 2 or 5 or 10 or 15. Like if you started smoking when you were 15 to handle your feelings, when you're smoking, you're operating out of a 15-year-old wounded self who's learned that way of avoiding your feelings. Mm-hmm. We all did this.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that we drew a false conclusion, and that is we're not good enough. Because the truth is that we all have this incredible soul who is a spark of the divine, who is perfect, who has all of our gifts, But when we're not getting love, we're not getting seen for who we are, the wounded self says, oh, I'm bad. I'm not good enough. And we hide who we are away. And we start to develop this persona, this way of being in the world, to have control, to try and control getting love and avoiding pain and feeling safe. And so that's the intention of the wounded self. Get love, avoid pain, feel safe. But based on that bottom line, core shame, false belief, I'm not good enough, I'm flawed, there's something wrong with me, I'm not important, things like that.
And it comes, the way that you know it's happening at this point in your life and the way it was created, right, is it comes in these sentences like, oh, for example, somebody's a pleaser, because when they were younger, their wounded self got developed to say, my parents have all these extreme expectations. So if I just try to keep doing what they need me to do, at some point, they're going to be happy. So then you have these overachieving, pleasing types. Or
right.
I can't win, so I'm just going to take myself out of this one. So you have people who withdraw and they tell themselves, it's not even worth trying because I can't win, right? But you start to tell yourself things and you take action. Is that right?
Based right.
on this wounded self. And that becomes right. who you think you are.
That's right. You think that's who you are because you've lost touch with who you are. And
yeah.
that's one of the major problems is people don't know who they are.
And so a tell sign that I'm coming from my wounded self. Anxiety?
Yeah, anxiety, depression, guilt, shame, anger, aloneness, emptiness, jealousy, resentment. I mean, these are the feelings that we cause by what I call self-abandonment. That we're abandoning responsibility for ourselves, for our own feelings. We're seeing ourselves as victims, like you said. We're victims of something going on outside. We're victims of our parents or our partner or the system or God or whatever it is, but it's external. And so that is basic to the wounded self. I'm a victim. I can't take care of myself. I'm not good enough. And we feel these very painful feelings that then people take medication for, anxiety, depression, all that, that are alerting us, because those feelings are actually alerting us to the fact that we're abandoning ourselves. So that's why they're so important. The minute I get a flicker of tension, I know that my wounded self has just said something that's not true, because first of all, the wounded self has no access to truth. It makes everything up. Everything it says is a lie. It may have been true when you were young, but it's certainly not true now. And so when I get some flicker of something other than peace inside, I'm alert to it because I learned to stay inside with my feelings. What did I just tell myself? That's got to be a lie. And then I go to my source for the truth. And then that tightness or tension goes away because I'm no longer operating from the lie that I just told myself.
And I just had an aha moment, but yes, like, so when I'm young, say you think to yourself, I can't win, so I'm not going to try, or let me try harder because if I could just get around this, I'm going to try harder. If I can get around this, then I will receive the love that I would desire.
Oh, and I can have control over it. See,
Yeah. But that's the lie. And we said that when we were younger because it was helpful to our survival, but now saying it, right, the anxiety that's coming up, it's not truly happening anymore. You're creating this in the relationships you're in. Yeah.
Yes, and so that's one of the reasons it's so important to be aware of those feelings. We teach that there's two different kinds of feelings. There's the feelings that we cause, which we call the wounded feelings because they're being caused by the wounded self, by the lies and the self-abandonment. And then there's the core feelings of life. Feelings like the loneliness that we all feel at times, or the heartbreak, the grief of loss, or the helplessness over others, the sorrow over seeing people hurt. So these are natural existential feelings of life. But when we were little, we couldn't handle them. They're very big feelings. And if we didn't have parents who knew how to handle the pain of life, then they couldn't show us how to do it. And in fact, they were often the cause of that pain. So we couldn't handle that pain. We had to find ways to avoid it. And that's part of what the wounded self was about, is to avoid the existential pain of life so that we could survive. Now, we need to learn to manage that pain, because if we're not going to open to the pain of life and learn to manage it with love and compassion and acceptance, we're still going to do all the controlling and avoiding behaviors of the wounded self that cause the wounded feelings, which in many ways are as bad or worse than the existential pain of life.
So here's a question, right? People are sitting there up in the middle of the night, ruminating, stressed, work deadlines, kids, relationships, right? It or somebody did something to you, it feels real. So how do people distinguish between this wounded emotional state and the core feelings of life?
Well, so when you learn to go inside, like if I have a painful feeling, I'm going to go inside and I'm going to ask, is this a feeling that I'm causing? Am I abandoning myself? Am I judging myself? Am I, you know, ruminating as a form of control? Am I not accepting something in life that's reality? Or is there something in life that I really need to attend to? It's actually not that hard to distinguish, because the feelings are very different. There's only so many existential painful feelings of life. There's maybe half a dozen. It's not like a huge number of feelings, but there's many, many, many feelings that we cause, many painful feelings that we cause, you know, the anxiety, depression, you know, that whole list that I just said. And so, I mean, I know immediately if I'm feeling anxious that my wounded self is telling me a lie. Hmm. But if I'm feeling heartache, if I'm feeling sorrow, if I'm feeling grief, if I'm feeling helpless over another person or a situation, that's an existential feeling of life. And we also teach people how to manage that, because that's so important to learn to lovingly, compassionately manage the pain of life. One of the problems is when people don't know how to do that, those feelings get stuck in the body. We just keep shoving them down, and they can cause illness. It's like an open wound inside that never gets healed, never gets opened and released. And so it's so important to learn to manage the existential pain of life. But with the inner bonding process, people can go in and ask, is this, you know, a feeling from life that I need to attend to, or am I causing this feeling?
And so I know you do this all day long, but I know there's people out there that are thinking it. Baby, walk me through this, right? Like the five or six emotions that are true existential life, like grief or pain, like somebody truly died, somebody left. We have heartbreak because of a relationship that came to a close. There's actually something tangible versus somebody's in a bad mood and I've decided to make that about me and I'm having a really bad day because of it, right? Somebody is temperamental, somebody, right? I can't, I want to be in a relationship with somebody who isn't reciprocating, whatever it is. It's harder in the moment, right? So are there a couple of little tricks people could use to differentiate really quickly, like things they could ask themselves?
Yeah. So when I go inside, the wounded feelings are usually somewhere in my gut. Like my gut gets tight when you know, if there's any lie or self-abandonment. But when it's a existential life pain, I can feel it in my heart. My heart hurts. Mm. And, you know, there's a lot of times in life that our heart hurts. My heart actually hurts anytime I'm around somebody who's being mean, who's being unloving, even if I don't know them, because I feel a sense of oneness with people. And so when somebody is mean, it's like, ugh. And so what I do when that happens is I acknowledge it. It's like I'm talking to my inner child, like I have an actual child. And I say, oh, honey, I know that angry or mean energy hurts your heart. And I'm right here with you. Mm-hmm. I totally understand how, you know, why that hurts your heart. And you can cry and I'm here. I'm going to hold you. You're not alone. And And then, of course, I help them understand that they're never alone, that spirit's here. And I say, you know, I'm here holding you, and we're being held by our source of love. And I'm going to stay with you while you feel this feeling. And I stay with it. Sometimes I cry a lot. Sometimes I don't. But I stay with it until it's ready to move through. And when it's ready to move through, I can feel that. And it's ready to be released. And I say, I release it to the universe. And I ask for peace and acceptance in return. It's really no different than if you have a hurting child and you're a loving parent and you hold that child on your lap and, honey, I'm here. I love you. You can cry. I'll kiss it, make it better. But you're there. You know, the child is not alone with the feeling. You're not saying, oh, don't be a baby, or big girls or big boys don't cry, or don't cry over spilt milk, or what's the big deal, or it's your fault. We're not doing any of those things. We're just acknowledging. And so it's the same thing that we would do with a child, we do with ourselves. That's what we do with the core pain of life. And sometimes it's very deep. And sometimes, like if you lose a loved one, you're going to have to do it over and over, because grief comes in waves. Mm-hmm. And every time it comes, you do what I just said. You hold it with compassion. Now, and compassion is not a feeling we generate. Compassion is a feeling we open to. It's a gift of spirit. And that's why it's so important to learn to open to our higher source, whatever that is for a person, God, spirit, higher self, higher power, whatever it is. But it's very, very important to learn to connect with that and bring that comfort and that compassion in. So if it's something like grief over the loss of a loved one, you may do it, and then maybe an hour later you have to do it again and again. But that's what releases it and doesn't let it get trapped in your body. Because I work with people who lost a loved one 20 years ago and never grieved, and now they're sick. Now they have cancer or something like that. And then when I help them go in and start to grieve that, they're on their road. They're on the road for healing. That's not the only thing, of course, but it's certainly a contributor to ill health, because it's stress.
Yeah.
And stress causes the immune system to not function well.
Yeah. And I think this is really where you caught me in the time that I met you, but I understood false beliefs, the narrations in our head, the things we're saying, but I didn't really take the time to acknowledge that, say somebody is angry in my presence that I adore, and it's not fun, right? Like that's not a fun experience. And so while I'm not going to get caught up that it's personal and things like that, I didn't take the time to value my experience and say, whew, that was hard to be around. And oh my goodness, like, right, what can I do to take care of myself can be a numbing experience, right? Like, let me shut it down and go for a walk. That's not the same, right? So that differentiation is really subtle. And I'm not sure too many people, I haven't really heard very many places, but to take the time, my son, I mean, if he falls and hurts himself or if he's upset about something, we take the time to sit with that feeling before we move on, right? But I shut down the narrations. I would go off and do some yoga or something, but I didn't take the time to sit with, like, that just was so depressing or hard or difficult.
Hurtful. It hurts.
It hurts, right? Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not blaming them. But I'm still having, because it's energetic, right? So when all that comes in your direction and you're receiving all that energy, it's like it's in you or something. You've got to like sit with that and let it move through you.
Well, and especially if you're a sensitive person and you're an empathic person, you are going to take on the energy of somebody that you love or somebody that you're close to. But even if it's somebody, like I said, that I don't know, I'm very sensitive to energy. And so I can feel that negativity, and I've learned not to take too much of it on, because in years past I would take it all on.
Yeah.
And now I've learned, yes, I feel it and I acknowledge it and I spend a moment with it and then I release it. If it's not somebody that I know, like clerk in the market who's mean or something, but if it's somebody I'm close to, it's going to take a bit of time.
So The wound itself we covered. The second part, we're now talking about this inner child sitting with the actual emotion. You call it the inner child, the soul, the inner self, and feelings. I've always thought of those as somewhat separate. Like, can you describe? So the wound itself is these messages we tell ourselves. It's more of in our minds. This is
right,
in our hearts.
In our mind.
Yeah.
It's a thought process. The wound itself, or in the lower part of the brain, it's a thought process. But the inner child is in our body. This is where our soul is. See, so we have a true, authentic part of us. People who have done any study of spirituality know that our soul is really, 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 really big, mm-hmm. and not all of it can fit in our body. So a part of our soul fits in, and that part communicates mostly through feelings. Can also speak to us, but mostly through feelings. The rest of our soul, the ad energy, is all around, and we can call that our higher self. Mm-hmm. The part of us that's in our body, the reason we like to call it an inner child is because most people don't think about taking responsibility for their feelings, but they know they're responsible for a child.
I see.
So it's just it's not really a child. It's the immortal part of us. So it's not a child. It's ancient. It's very wise. But if we think of it as an inner child, it might help us want to take responsibility for it. So it is our soul, our true self, our essence that often communicates through feelings.
I see. Interesting. And so if I'm at home and I'm interested in practicing this, because then there's the higher self that's connected to the universe, spirit, however you want to think about that. How can I visualize these separate components effectively? Because it's all me in the end, right? So I have to create some kind of cueing so my brain doesn't pull these all together, or right? What are some techniques people could use?
Yeah, so at the beginning of practicing inner bonding, it is important to separate out. Eventually, there's a flow inside and we don't have to separate out as much. But when people start, step one of inner bonding is just getting present in your body with your feelings. So it's like getting present, like your son is crying and you're getting present with them. Mm-hmm. So that's the first step, is you just get present. And so you're getting present with your feeling self, your inner child, whatever you want to call that, your soul. You're mm-hmm. getting present. And you make a decision you want responsibility for those feelings. That's really important, that you want responsibility for those feelings. And so to recognize that that part is in our body, it's our feeling self. The other aspect, so there's the wound itself that's in the lower part of the brain with all the false beliefs. But the other aspect that we need to develop, and most people who come to inner bonding don't have this at all, is what we call the loving adult. And the loving adult is like who you are when your son is hurting. You're showing up with love. You want to be there. You're the mom, you're the dad, you're whatever, and you want to be there. Well, that's what we have to learn to do for ourselves. What most people do is they make somebody else their loving adult, or they make somebody else their higher power, and that creates a disaster in relationships. And so in the inner bonding process, when we say, I want responsibility for my feelings, that's the beginning of creating a loving adult. And so that's step one. And step two, we breathe into our heart and we consciously say, I want to learn. I want to learn what's loving to me. I want to learn about my false beliefs. I want to learn the truth. I want to learn how I'm abandoning myself. I want to learn these things. We make that decision and then we open and we invite the love and compassion of spirit. It's very simple. We just say, I invite love and compassion into my heart. It's just a choice. Even if people don't have a spiritual belief system, if they just say that, they're going to be inviting that in. And that's what the loving adult is. The loving adult is who we are when we're open to learning about loving ourselves and about our false beliefs, and we have love and compassion in our heart. So there's those parts. And then in step three, we're asking ourselves, okay, what am I telling you? If we're anxious, we're depressed, guilty, shamed, angry, empty, alone, jealous, whatever, or say, what am I telling you? How am I treating you that's causing these feelings? And that's when we start to tap into the false beliefs of the wounded self. Because let's say we're feeling anxious and I'm asking, what am I telling you? So my inner child might say, well, you're judging me as not being good enough, and you're telling me I have to be perfect and I better do everything right, and what did I do wrong, and everything's my fault or whatever. See, these are the kinds of things.
What is my wounded self, my mind? What are the things I'm saying that my feelings are reacting to, right?
That's right. That's right. Okay. And so then once, let's say you're telling yourself that you got to be perfect. You know, maybe you're going to do a presentation. You better be perfect. You better not make a mistake. Nobody's going to like you.
Yeah. Uh-oh, you're in trouble.
Oh my God. You know.
Or I got to get out of here. Bad things are about to happen.
Right, right. Okay. So that's a lot of stress. See, and you think it's the outside situation that's causing the stress, but it's really what you're telling yourself about.
Uh-huh.
So then you go a little deeper in step three and you ask that wounded self, what's the point of saying that you have to be perfect? What are you trying to control? What are you trying to avoid? And what are you trying to protect against? This is what we ask that wounded part who's saying you got to be perfect. And then you can control how people feel about you. Okay, well, where did you get that? How old were you when you learned that? What made you conclude that you could control how people feel about you by doing everything right and being perfect?
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, is not true. It's a lie. It's a false belief. But it's one of the things that almost everybody learned to tell themselves as part of their survival. If I can do everything right and be perfect, then I can have control over people liking me or loving
me. Yeah.
So we're going deeper to understand what we're telling ourselves and why we're telling it to ourselves, what's the point, and where we learn that. That's part of step three.
Okay. And before we go on to the next step, I'm just going to bring it home to like these moments, right? Like people are triggered, they're overwhelmed, they're fighting with their spouse, they're arguing with their kids, right? They're just in it and they can't find the differentiation, right? They're trying to ask that part, but they're not understanding how to locate it. How do you ask a part of yourself when it's all you? What could somebody do just in that?
Okay. So one of the things to understand is that if you're in turmoil with somebody, if you're in conflict with somebody, you're in your wounded self.
Right.
And so you can't get there while you're in the conflict. You have to take some time out. And this is one of the things that I tell couples all the time is that, you know, don't continue to fight from your wounded self. You're going to explain, you're going to defend, you're going to give yourself up, you're going to threaten, you're going to do all these things that you're going to hurt each other with.
Yeah. Most so you,
right. So you have to take some space. You have to take a time out. What I call lovingly disengaging is to get out of the energy of that. And so one of the things that people can do is just get themselves a doll or stuffed animal and pick it up and hold it like you would a child. Breathe. I'm here. Mm. You're not alone, you know, and just, or go outside in nature. That's what I do. And if I'm stirred up, I'll go outside in nature and hug a tree. I mean, nature is very comforting and has a high frequency and is very helpful. So, or listen to music or call a friend or meditate or pray or do something to bring your energy down, because you want to be moving out of your wounded self. You can't learn in that state. It's not a state of learning. So you want to do something to de-escalate and then go through the steps
and
then move into your loving adult.
And like pleasure-seeking activities, that's the problem, right? Like you don't want to just replace that wounded sense with shopping or drinking or something that just flips it from pain to pleasure, right? That's where people get stuck. You've got to...
Well, yeah, because then they're using an addiction to numb out. I don't want to feel my feelings and I'm going to eat or I'm going to drink or I'm going to shop or I'm going to take a drug or whatever to numb out rather than taking responsibility for my feelings. Well, that's just another form of abandonment. Let's say your child comes to you upset and you just go graze in front of the refrigerator, or you turn on the TV, or you grab a cigarette, or you grab a drink, that child now feels worse because they're being abandoned by you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens on the inner level. When we turn to an addiction to numb out, we're further abandoning our own feelings rather than taking responsibility.
And so I go out into nature. I totally get that. That's such an important distinction. So I go out into nature, or I go for a walk, or I call a friend, but I can't quiet it, right? Like a lot of people get to a place where it's like the volume gets so loud, they're so uncomfortable. They've taken their space, but that's not enough. What else could they do to...
They have to want to understand what they're trying to control.
Okay.
Because that you know, what's going round and round and ruminating and thinking is a form of control. It's an addiction, actually.
Mm.
An addiction to ruminating, an addiction to judgment, an addiction to obsessive thinking.
Mm.
You see, and so they have to find a place in them that wants to understand their beliefs about what do they think they can control if they ruminate enough? See, I used to do this. I used to ruminate all the time and worry all the time. And I finally, once I learned inner bonding, I said, what do I believe about that? What do I believe is going to happen if I worry and ruminate enough? And the answer was, I'll somehow find a way to control.
Yeah.
Well, that was a big false belief.
Yeah.
You know, my mother and my grandmother were huge worriers and ruminators. And of course, I picked it up. And my mother firmly believed, see, nothing bad ever happened to her, but she firmly believed that the reason it didn't is because she worried so much. And my father never worried, and nothing bad ever happened to him either. But my mother firmly believed that it didn't happen bad for him because she worried about him too, see. So it was all about control. And when I got that, oh, I think worrying and ruminating will give me control. Well, it didn't. It just made me stressed. Then I was able to start to move beyond that.
Beautiful. Thank you for that distinction. Because this stuff, this is why I like your work, because it quiet your mind, meditate, but it sometimes doesn't work, right? And so the motivation, I think I'm going to get control over it, right? And I'm not. How many times have people stayed up all night thinking about something and it did not help, right? You wake up in the morning, you're like, what did I do? I'm still in the same place. I've expended all this energy. I'm no close. In fact, I'm further from a solution because I'm so stressed out and I'm so deeply in my thoughts, my egoic self.
That's right. And I'm exhausted.
And I'm exhausted. And right. I haven't sat with my truth. So, okay. So then let's talk about this piece of our truth, right? Because that's also a challenge. Like when you say the higher self, I've worked really hard to find this elusive, authentic higher self. I work in the Akashic record now, which connects me to it. But that's a hard one for a lot of people.
Yeah. So first of all, it's very important to understand that as we start to do this work, see, the wounded self thinks it knows truth.
Right.
But it actually has no access to truth. It's like a program that goes round and round and round. It's programmed with all these beliefs, but it has no access to truth. But it's got a loud voice. And it'll tell you, like I tell people, the wounded self is like a little kid with a big megaphone. I know the truth. I will tell you what to do. And yet it's just a child or an adolescent that really doesn't know anything. It comes off as a voice of knowledge, but it's a voice of ignorance.
Yes.
And so we have to understand that. But it wants control. So when we start to get on this path of letting go, of listening to that voice and getting that it doesn't know anything, it'll get louder and louder because it wants to maintain control. However, we do have a source of truth, and this is this our higher soul, whatever you want to call it. And we can access that directly. And it took me a long time to understand because I really wanted to learn to do this. I knew it was possible, but I was brought up in an atheist family. I had no idea how to do this. And sometimes I would have an experience of it, but I couldn't do it at will. And it took me a long time to understand what was necessary to access that higher guidance. So higher guidance operates at a higher vibration, a higher frequency than we do. We operate at a denser frequency so we can see each other. Like if we operated like a hummingbird's wings, for example, really, really, really fast, we wouldn't see each other. Mm-hmm. So we have to be denser. And spirit, most people can't see spirit. A few people can raise their frequency high enough. Operates at a higher frequency, and that's why we can't see it. Doesn't mean it's not there. So in order to access the love and the truth and the wisdom and the comfort and all that of spirit, we have to be able to raise our frequency. Mm-hmm. So early in my life, I was a very sickly kid. And in my early 20s, I was sick of being sick, and I started to read everything about health. And at that time, I switched everything over to organic food. So I've been doing that for a long time. And when inner bonding came in 36 years ago, and I understood about the intention to learn, I realized, oh, the intention to learn about loving myself raises my frequency. That's very powerful, that intention, because that's what spirit is here for. It's to support you in learning to love yourself so that you can share your love with other people and with the planet. And so when I started to practice the intention to learn to love myself, suddenly, after all these years of trying to have this connection, it was there really easily. I was just shocked. So I thought, okay, all I have to do is teach my clients to open to learning about loving themselves and they'll have that access, except it didn't happen that way. And then I finally discovered that a frequency is also about your body. It's not just about your mind. You can raise the frequency of your mind by moving into the intention to learn about loving yourself, but your body has a frequency. And if you're eating junk food, you're eating sugar, you're eating foods with pesticides and GMOs and factory farm foods and all this stuff, your body is operating out of too low a frequency. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was easy for me is because I'd been eating organic for so many years.
Yeah.
And so bam, it just happened. But then it took me a while to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. Now when I teach it, I say, if you're having trouble connecting with your guidance, you have to not only look at your intention, but you have to look at how you're treating your body.
Yeah.
What are you putting in your body that's keeping your frequency too low?
Yeah. And this part in the middle that you spoke to, I've been eating healthy since I was 18 too. It's a game changer. If you can honor your body, it's the vessel we're living. It's such a critical part of life. But the journey that I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that led me to you was I decided that I needed to learn about self-love. And I had gone out into the world and I was looking at this stuff and it was kind of like a sappy and nothing was really appealing to me, right? Like love myself and say weird mantras. But this idea, right? Like filling myself up with love from this idea of connecting to the bigger sense of who I am, that I am connected to the universe, to right others, that we're all in this interconnected fabric of love. And that to me was what finally resonated, that this was within me. I'm not my mind. I am not my experiences. I'm this else, this essence, right? And
right.
We know this because when we talk about the people we love, we love their essence. We love this, but that's the part you can't touch. You can't find. It's not a piece of them. It's a sense of them. And so then that's true for myself. So how do I fill myself up with loving that, right? And connecting to that, and then share that with others. And so if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about that, because that's such a different way to think about love, right? We think about love as getting it or filling up with it or holding it because we don't want to get hurt, right? Those are the main false beliefs, I believe, around love. But connecting to your essence and then just being in that frequency and sharing it with the people in your life, right? And with yourself.
Yeah. So one of the things that we realized when we were creating inner bonding is that we don't have role models for loving ourselves. You know, my parents had no idea how to love themselves. And I looked around and I didn't see role models. So realize that we need to be able to turn to a higher source for that. And really, it's something we need to learn to do in any given situation. People say, well, what do I do in this situation? Well, what do I do? How do I love myself? Well, it depends on the situation. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of the reasons it's so important to be able to open to that source at will and say, what's loving to me right now? And that's one of the things that I encourage people to start to do all day long. What's loving to me right now? I ask it all day about everything. What's in my highest good right now? And I get information all day long. So in the inner bonding process, once you've done step three, you understand how you're treating yourselves, what your false beliefs are. Then step four is you're opening to learning with that higher source and whatever that is for you. Very often I say to people, just imagine an older, wiser part of yourself, because a lot of people, they had spiritual abuse. They have a concept of God as this judgmental man in the sky, and they don't want to open to that. And so just imagine an older, wiser part of you, or a relative who loved you, or you know, whatever works. It doesn't really matter. It's the intention to learn about loving yourself that opens you to love and truth, which is here. It's what we live in.
Yeah.
And so when we open to that, when we say, well, what's the truth about this belief that if I'm perfect, I can control how people feel about me, we're going to start to access information about that. And then what would be loving to myself in this situation? We're going to access information about that. And it takes time. It takes practice. It's not going to be instant. But as people really raise their frequency, open to learning about loving themselves and eat well, they're going to be able to access that information. And then the next step, step five, is they act on it. Like if your son comes in and he's upset and the loving action is to sit with him, you don't just say, oh, well, I should sit with him, and then you go take a walk. You go and sit with him, mm-hmm. right? See, so you take the action.
Yeah.
You take the action. And then in step six, you tune in to see how you feel as a result of that action. So the actions, the loving actions, can be so many different things, depending on what the situation is. But as you learn to connect with that source of guidance and learn to stay open to it, you start getting filled up with love. And the more you take action for yourself, the more love you feel inside. You know, people think that love from somebody else is going to feel better than doing it for themselves. But actually, the most wonderful feeling in life is the sharing love, not the getting of love. And we can't share love if we don't have love inside. And so I was shocked when I started, because I thought the best feeling came from outside, when I started really loving myself, taking loving actions, speaking up for myself, which I had never done before, no longer giving myself up in caretaking, which was a whole challenge in itself, taking time for myself, tuning into what would be fun, balancing work and play. I mean, there's so many different loving actions we can take.
Yeah.
But as I started to do that, I started to feel fuller and fuller inside. And I started to discover through the eyes of my higher guidance who I am inside. We don't know that from our wounded self. We cannot see it. But we can learn to see it through the eyes of love, through the eyes of our higher self. And the more we have this connection, the more we see how incredible we each are. I mean, we are each divine, unique sparks, and we each have our own gifts, and we're each absolutely incredible. And so over time, with practicing inner bonding and connecting to that source of love and truth and wisdom, we take more and more loving action. We see ourselves more and more. We get more filled up with love, and then we have love to share. And then we get to experience the most wonderful, glorious experience in life, which is the sharing of love.
I love it. And I love it because what you're saying in essence, right, is that the more we tune in to where we are, take care of ourselves, we learn about ourselves, we honor what that is, right? Authenticity. It's being true to who we are. Only we know that. We take care of that part of ourselves, and then we share it in the world. So on that note, this is what I ask everybody who comes on the show, what does an authentic life mean to you?
for me, it means living from my heart and soul, not from my head, not from my programmed mind.
Yeah.
It's not that the mind isn't important, but it has to be in service of the heart and soul. So for me, being authentic is coming from who I really am, not from who I think I'm supposed to be in order to have control over how people feel about me.
Yep. And I would say, what are your practices? But since we spent the whole show on them, then I think we covered it. Thank you so much for showing up. For people who are interested in learning more about the Interbonding System, learning about you, where can they find you?
They go to interbonding.com. There's a phone number on there if they want to call my assistant. They can set up phone, Skype, Zoom sessions. I have many trained facilitators that they can work with. We have many free resources on the site, a free course to help people start to learn inner bonding, and many, many, many thousands of free articles and free help. Plus, we have paid courses. I just got finished doing a 5-day virtual intensive, which is amazing that I can do it virtually. workshops. We have an amazing facilitator training program for people who are interested in learning to facilitate this. There's just an awful lot on the website. So I hope people go to interbonding.com.
Thank you. And all that information will be on our website as well. Thank you so much for your time and coming on our show today.
Yeah, and one more thing. There's a whole lot of books on interbonding. So
yes.
Yeah, yes. So you can learn it from a book. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, Laura. I really appreciate this time with you.
Thank you.